Hi, this is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon, and I'm here today talking to John Concannon, the fourth generation vintner of one of the oldest, if not the oldest winery in California, Concannon. John, thank you very much for doing this.
You're welcome, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
And John's in Dallas to do a whole bunch of things. He gets to go call on retailers, and he's going to be at Savor Dallas tonight, which is Dallas's big, one of Dallas's big wine events. But John, we're going to talk a little bit about your wines, and I want to talk about some stuff that is interest to people who read the blog, which is, of course, the wine market and how to find good values in wine. And I'll say this right now, John and I have been tasting some new Concannon wines, and it looks like there's some pretty good values there at around $12 or $13. But John, when we were talking, you said something interesting, which was about what consumers are looking for in wine during the recession. And if you would maybe mention that a little bit in terms of what prices they're looking for and why you think they're doing that.
Well, sure, Jeff. Last year was a difficult year for everybody, and the wine industry certainly was not excluded from that. So what I wanted to try to do was get a sampling across the United States of what consumers were looking for and price points they were at. And what I typically found was that the average consumer is trading down about two price points. If they were drinking a $100 bottle, if maybe, God forbid, had to drink a $50 bottle, 50 or 30. But, for people like you and me and most of us, what they really wanted, I found, was, an everyday drinker for well under $10. And special occasions, go up to about, 15. And you really want to stay out of that 15 to 20 price range. That sometimes that's confusing for the customer. They either want a higher price or wine or less.
Do you think the wine business was surprised by this? When the consumer's trading down like that?
Well, I certainly think some people thought. I think more importantly, I think some people were not as well positioned for what inevitably happened. And the thing with Concannon is we've always had this motto and this over delivering the price point. We've always had our wines nationally two lines, one under $10 and then one kind of a trade up treat for under $15.
Well, it's just in talking to people over the last 18 months, one of the things that's really surprised me is how unprepared the wine business was for what happened, because what you're telling me is certainly seems kind of obvious in hindsight. And I'm just curious if when you guys all sit around in the wine business and have a glass of wine after dinner, if everybody goes, wow, I never expected this.
Well, I do remember one meeting we had well before last year hit us. And, we kind of looked at the wine market and we saw it coming. And we thought, there's three categories. There's recession fighters, depression fighters, and roadkill. And if you're not in the first two categories, you're roadkill and you don't want to be that. And depression fighters are, cheap and cheerful wines. You get that with their under $10 wines, Pinot Grigio, Sauv Blanc. We have a beautiful looking dry rosé. Recession fighters are those our second tier, the conservancy wines we've been tasting, and just a good value,
Talk to me a little bit, if you would, about Petite Sirah, because if Concannon is famous for anything, it's famous for Petite Sirah. How did that get to become the Concannon grape?
Right. Well, my great-grandfather, he traveled back to France. We were established in 1883. First time he went back to France, he went twice, was to pick up Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon cuttings from the very famous Chateau de Chem winery, which we still perpetuate on our estate. And then he traveled back a second time and was the first to obtain Durift cuttings or Petite Sirah cuttings. Dr. Durift was a famous viticulturist from France, and he brought those back. For many years, through the early 1900s to the mid-1900s, it was a blending grape in Burgundies primarily. Back then you had Chablis and Burgundy, white and red. And back in 1961, my father was the first to make Petite Sirah varietal, and I asked him, what his great inspiration was, and he said he had a client down in the Los Angeles area that asked him, said, Jimmy, what are you putting in that Burgundy? And he said, well, I'm putting this and that and some Petite Sirah. And he said, I'll tell you what, just make me a varietal with 500 with just Petite Sirah. It'll take 500 cases. That's it's a done deal. So I thought there'd be something more behind it, but it came, back when we were doing 20,000 cases a year, that was a big deal. So that was the genesis of it, and we've actually trademarked the phrase America's First Petite Sirah.
Why do you think Petite Sirah doesn't get the respect that, for instance, I love the wine, and I write about Petite Sirah, and it's not Sirah, and it's not Cabernet, and maybe it gets lost a little bit in that shuffle. But on the other hand, Zinfandel has seemed to have recovered very nicely from it being lost in the shuffle with white Zinfandel. Do you see Petite Sirah becoming more popular? Are there things that, that people should know about it?
I do see it becoming more popular. I think it's one of those wines that certainly is going to become more popular as the years go on. And I think part of the reason why there has been some confusion, certainly as you mentioned, is because it is a hybrid from the Syrah, and there is the confusion of is it Syrah, Petite Syrah, and you know, is it petite in taste? And like I always like to say, there's nothing petite about Petite Syrah. We just tasted this one here. It's so I think there's education that needs to be done, and it is a little bit, it does get a little bit lost in the shuffle. But why I love it is it's certainly, if I'm going to drink a red wine, I typically gravitate towards it. It's a big, bold wine. It's great with steak, barbecue, Asian food, anything spicy. It stands up nicely. But like with ours, because of some of the old school winemaking techniques we're doing, you can certainly drink it alone. It's very pleasant.
And for people who maybe haven't had Petite Sirah, it's going to be theoretically a little less fruity than a Merlot. It's not going to have the tannins of a Cabernet, and it's going to be, to drink on its own, if you want some red wine to drink on its own, a little more pleasant. And it just has a certain darkness to it that, that I really like. Let's talk about wine education a little bit, because without me getting on my soapbox too much, one of the things that frustrates me about writing about wine and about the wine industry is the idea that the wine business doesn't do enough in terms of education, to educating consumers. Have you found this to be something that that maybe as a winery, as a fourth generation vintner, that you guys can take a little bit with when you go make an appearance, when you talk to wine drinkers?
Absolutely. I certainly agree with you that you know, wine needs to be, the way I was raised is wine is something to be enjoyed with family and friends. It's an honor to have our wine on other people's table for dinner or a meal. And we're very committed to wine education. Out at our estate, we've done things to help educate the wine community. We've just recently planted a wine demonstration vineyard where we've planted different varietals, so you can literally look at a Syrah and a Petite Syrah and see that, you know, why is it called Petite Syrah? And the petite comes from the smallness of the berries and the tightness of the bunches, but yet the vines are very vigorous and the leaves are large. So we're very committed to that. And then certainly when I go out, how to taste wine, and it doesn't have to be overly complicated. You know, the bottom line is you know, you, at the end of it, you look at the clarity and taste it and use all your senses, but you form a conclusion at the end of, do I like this wine, and is it a wine that's worth $7 to $10?
Oh, that's a wonderful question, and sadly it's not a question that enough people ask, because we get so hung up, we get so intimidated, we get so lost in the jargon.
Yes.
that nobody drinks wine. And I'm convinced that people would drink more wine if it was easier to drink, if we didn't have this great hullabaloo around it.
I couldn't agree more, my father and mother told me, you know, growing up, said, you know, never be pretentious about wine. Again, it's an honor to have our wine shared at someone else's table, and it's meant to, you know, it's a social activity, and our wines are very much food friendly. My mom, who is an accomplished cook and chef, she said, you know, always taught me growing up that the wine should complement the meal, not overpower it. And that's why with our wines, they're 13.5% alcohol. They're not these big berry bombs that are going to blow out your taste buds.
So let me ask you the tough question now.
All right,
tough question. If you don't want to drink your wine, if for some reason you can't drink your wine, what are some wines that you like that are consumer friendly in terms of price?
Wow, yeah, that is the tough question. You know,
I ask everyone, and they always say the same thing.
Okay, I might not have a unique answer for that one. You know, look, I mean, there's certainly a lot of great wines out there. And, you know, especially now, great, great values. And, you know, part of the enjoyment is discovering those little gems. And there's a lot of great ones out there. I personally do stick with our own. So that's probably the one canned answer I'm going to give you. A lot of great ones out there.
Okay. All right. You can mention your friends if you want.
You know, if I'm going to name drop one company, and you know, that I really I admire what they're doing, and I think we talked earlier, there aren't a lot of family involved wineries out there, and one that I do respect from a personal standpoint and the product they have is J-Lor. Mm-hmm. I really like what he's done, and I've had a chance to get to know his son. So from a personal and a professional standpoint, I don't know if it fits the some of the price ranges you're looking at, but that we're competing with, but I do admire them as a winery.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for doing this. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you have a good time tonight at Savor Dallas.
Thank you so much, sir. Pleasure.
This is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. May your glass always be full, and may you always enjoy who you're drinking the wine with. So long.